From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's foreclosure issue prompts some harsh words as a Senate committee considers changes to present law.
I'm sorry, but I think you're a disgrace.
Try and be respectful, please.
I'm sorry, I think they're a disgrace
because... I know, but we just need to keep
order. School districts stand strong behind a measure to shield them from lawsuits.
This is so needed. Taxpayers paid for these properties. These are taxpayer properties that are sitting there when their kids and the kids of that community cannot access these properties.
A bill sailing through the legislature could lead to higher property taxes, and you'll hear why a federal ruling to enforce water pollution limits in the state has both sides of the issue claiming victory. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. All right, so today's meeting of the Florida Senate Judiciary Committee began peacefully enough, but Tom Flanagan reports things quickly turned tense when members began debating a bill that would change the state's laws governing foreclosure.
Along with Nevada, Florida has been America's foreclosure headquarters for the past 4 years. There are still nearly 370,000 foreclosure cases inching their way through the state's courts. The average time to settle a foreclosure case in Florida is about 2 years. So state senators and the Judiciary Committee took up a bill that sponsor, St. Petersburg Republican Jack LaValla said, could help untangle a terrible mess.
There are some protections in here that hopefully would curb some of the problems that have we've experienced with regard to people trying to foreclose on homes that they don't really have the note on.
But even before the committee meeting, consumer groups and several others said they'd speak against the bill. The major objection, that homeowners would be denied due process and that the measure was weighted in favor of those doing the foreclosing. To defuse the opposition, LaValla turned the bill explanation over to Republican State Representative Greg Stube of Sarasota.
Some of the concerns that have come to me, and I'm sure that you have heard in regards to this bill, has it been as it's related to due process, the discovery issue in the defenses. And I want to make it very clear that this strike all allows for any defendant in the process to file any answer or defenses that they feel is necessary in the defense of their case.
Just to be clear, a strike all is what happens when the original wording of a bill is essentially tossed out and the text replaced with new wording. But that did little to reassure those speaking against the bill, such as Alice Vickers with the Florida Consumer Action Network.
It's a complete erosion of current law as it has been since really the beginning of real property law. You cannot get adequate redress with money damages. You are entitled to the return of your property if it has been incorrectly taken from you.
Eatonville pastor, the Reverend Charlie Bank, used a biblical reference, urging compassion for those losing their homes through foreclosure.
Don't be like those that passed by the wounded man on the Jericho Road. These people are wounded. And they need help. And we can help them.
Ron Gillis, who said he was speaking only for himself, went after the bill's supporters, which drew a rebuke from committee chair Anatiri Flores.
I'm sorry, but I think you're a disgrace.
Try and be respectful, please.
I'm sorry, I think they're a disgrace
because... I know, but we just need to keep order.
But wait a minute, because they're making comments about stuff. They have made an oath to the people, not the banksters.
After much more public testimony and considerable member debate, Senator LaValla promised to take all the input, good and bad, into account.
I will promise you that over the next week before we see Senator Richter's committee, that I will work diligently to learn more about this and try to alleviate some of the issues.
The committee then passed the LaValla bill. At the moment, there's no companion bill in the House. However, that would not stop that chamber from taking up and passing the Senate bill after it works its way through the process. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
A bill to shield public schools from lawsuits when groups like the local Little League use their facilities after hours is making its way through the legislature. Lynn Hatter reports the proposal has had an easy ride through most of its committee stops and faces little resistance.
Senator Jim Norman says the intent behind his public school sovereign immunity bill is simple.
This is so needed. Taxpayers paid for these properties. These are taxpayer properties that are sitting there when their kids and the kids of that community cannot access these properties.
Norman, a Republican from Tampa, says his bill would open school grounds to the public after hours. Groups like the local YMCA could sign agreements with the school district to use the facilities on weekends or in the afternoons. And should an accident happen, the district would be shielded from lawsuits in most cases. Fellow Republican Senator Andy Gardner says he supports the bill.
We had this exact problem in Orlando, Orange County, a few years ago, where there was a YMCA located right next to a school, and there was a fence that kept them apart. And if this goes a little bit farther, with all due respect to the attorneys, sometimes I think we over-litigate to the point where it's easier to put up a fence and sit down and try to get it worked out.
For over 20 years, we've had a what we call a joint use agreement with the city of Tallahassee and with the county, Board of County Commissioners.
Ricky Bell is the director of student activities with the Leon County School District. It has agreements with both the city and county to allow the Little League or other city-county sponsored groups to use school gyms, tracks, and stadiums. The district also allows organizations like the YMCA to rent spaces with some addendums.
They have to have insurance, you know, that covers us in case somebody gets hurt, and then they pay we have a fee set to rent the facility for, you know, the day or whatever. We make them have I think it's $1 million worth of coverage. It names us, Leon County School Board, as additional insured. So if there is some kind of, you know, we're on their policy as additional insured in case there is a situation where there's a lawsuit. So, you know, we're not the ones being sued. The group that rented the facility is.
Bell says the district's current policy has worked well over the years, yet notes that there are some districts that don't let outside groups use their facilities out of concern over lawsuits. But one area Bell says he would really like to see addressed is when individuals use school properties. For example, the person who runs the high school track after school.
If it would grant us sovereign immunity, that would be great. We wouldn't have to worry about it. All that stuff.
The bill by Senator Jim Norman will extend sovereign immunity to schools in those instances as well. The proposal has lots of support and widespread agreement, even from groups like the Florida Justice Association, which oppose it. The association's Paul Jess says while his group likes the concept of the bill, he worries the immunity language goes too far.
This is a very well-intentioned bill that we look forward to supporting at some point in the process, hopefully after an amendment. At this point, we are opposed due to our concerns with the limitation on liability section of the bill, which we read as too broad.
Jess says as the proposal is currently written, it could also shield school districts from lawsuits when students are injured on campus in the course of a regular school day.
The immunity from liability in the bill is not limited to the public that use the school grounds pursuant to the joint use agreement or the public access. It is broad enough to apply to students who are using the school properly during the day.
Under current law, districts and schools can be held liable when people are seriously injured on campus, regardless of when it occurs. But Norman's bill raises the burden of proof on people who want to file lawsuits. The Justice Association says with a few tweaks to the bill, it could get behind it. The districts say any kind of immunity is good for them. And Norman says he's just trying to do his part to fight the obesity epidemic in kids by giving greater access to play areas, especially in neighborhoods where a school may be the only place to go. The bill cleared the committee unanimously and now heads to its last committee stop. A similar bill is also moving through the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a Senate committee passes a bill that could lead to higher property taxes.
I'm willing to increase my taxes and the taxes of my constituents to help those people because they've made a supreme sacrifice.
A federal ruling on Florida's water pollution limits has both sides declaring victory.
I think the fact that it's so complicated is the reason that EPA lost on the streams issue. Their springs criteria and their lakes criteria passed the judicial review, but their streams, where it's most difficult to set these standards, they fell short.
And as state regulators try to figure whether a utility company should be allowed to spend $1.2 billion to build a new power plant, some say it's not in the best interest of consumers.
We believe it's not FPL's consumers. We believe it's FPL shareholders that need this plant. It's about being able to meet earnings on Wall Street.
The surviving spouse of a veteran killed in combat and those of first responders who die on the job would get a major property tax break under a proposal moving through the Senate. James Call reports the Fallen Heroes Family Tax Relief Act cleared the Senate Judiciary Committee today.
Tampa Senator Jim Norman says if you give your life serving your community or country, then your spouse deserves a tax break. His idea dates to the start of the Iraq War. Then, Norman was a member of the Hillsborough County Commission.
When the war in Iraq started, we as the Hillsborough County Commission adopted 2,000 soldiers that served in combat zones. We later adopted the families of surviving spouses when 33 soldiers came back after they were killed in service. What this does, it takes that wonderful program and takes it statewide.
Norman proposes a property tax break in a joint resolution that would need to be approved by voters. It would allow the legislature to provide tax relief to surviving spouses of veterans and first responders who died while serving their community, either while on active duty as a member of the armed forces or as a first responder, a police officer, firefighter, or paramedic. The fiscal impact of the bill was undetermined, but last year, Florida led the nation in the number of police officers who died while on duty. There were 14. And just this past weekend, Clay County Detective David White died in a shootout when police raided a Middleburg meth lab. White was 35 years old.
His wife and his two children are faced with mountains of problems. What I want government to do, as we have, I want them to be able to stay in their home. I want our community, this state of Florida, to be able to stand behind law enforcement spouses. They gave all for our protection. And I want the state of Florida to give them all.
Florida provides a variety of property tax breaks. There is a $25,000 homestead exemption and an additional exemption for senior citizens. And voters have also placed limits on assessments, such as a Save Our Homes 3% cap. A home's assessed value cannot increase by more than 3% in a calendar year. Together, all this may keep a property tax bill affordable. But homeowners face what Senate staff calls a frustrating paradox. Falling real estate markets combined with rising property taxes. Senators say they want to spare the surviving spouse and children of a fallen first responder or soldier from such concerns. And Destin Senator Don Gates says a tax cut for somebody usually translates into a tax increase for someone else. But Gates says in these cases, he's willing to pay more in taxes.
I'm willing to increase my taxes and the taxes of my constituents to help those people because they've made a supreme sacrifice. And yes, the survivors do get the benefit, but they also get a lifelong pain of losing, in many cases, the breadwinner, a mother, a father, somebody who has been an economic underpinning for the family, as well as just the loss of a human being. So yeah, for the disabled, and for those who give their lives for our community and our state and our country, I'm willing to change the tax code and carry an extra burden for them.
The resolution passed out of the committee on a unanimous vote. It now goes to the Budget Committee. The House has already passed a similar measure. The amount of the tax break proposed by the joint resolution will be determined by the legislature if voters approve the constitutional amendment in November. The legislature could exempt a survivor's entire property tax bill. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
You're listening to Capital Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. A federal judge has ruled that specific limits on sewage and fertilizer contamination in state waters must go into effect in 3 weeks. As Sasha Cordner reports, even though the judge invalidated the requirements in some water bodies, both sides in the ongoing battle over Florida's water pollution standards are declaring some kind of victory.
This is an important milestone in the protection of Florida waters.
David Guest is an attorney with Earth Justice, an environmental group that filed a Clean Water Act federal lawsuit a few years ago on behalf of other environmental groups seeking limits on the pollutants in Florida's water bodies. He's happy with U.S. District Judge Robert Hinkle's ruling on Saturday that would require the immediate enforcement of pollution limits on lakes and springs by March 6. Environmental groups are calling it limits on, quote, sewage manure and fertilizer contamination for Florida's fresh waters. The pollutants feed algae blooms on lakes and streams. The blooms can cause health problems and can also be fatal to wildlife.
So this really means that we have turned the corner in getting control of the slime outbreaks, the huge toxic algae outbreaks that have plagued the state of Florida increasingly across recent years.
Environmental groups have been longtime supporters of the Environmental Protection Agency's federal water standards, calling it more stringent than the state's new rules. But in his 86-page ruling, U.S. District Judge Robert Hinkle upheld the lakes and spring standards that is close to Florida's new numeric nutrient criteria, but says the federal rules for streams and rivers are invalid. Guests call that just a, quote, technical defect in the EPA's rule.
It found a couple of technical defects in this very long and complicated rule and gave EPA a couple of months to correct them.
The judge ruled the limits on streams and rivers were, quote, arbitrary and capricious, and told the EPA that they had until May 21st to come up with new limits. That had the applause of utility and industry groups, which battled environmental groups for years on the numeric nutrient standard. They claim the state of Florida knows how best to manage its own waters and don't need the federal standards.
I think the fact that it's so complicated is the reason that EPA lost on the streams issue. It's extraordinarily difficult to come up with standards that really prevent the harm, and it's clear that they weren't able to do so. I mean, their springs criteria and their lakes criteria passed the judicial review, but their streams, where it's most difficult to set these standards, they fell short.
The attorney that represents the wastewater utility groups, David Child, says the ruling is significant for the groups that he represents because the court invalidated the EPA's numeric nutrient criteria rules for Florida streams.
EPA had established streams criteria that limited nutrient concentrations in Florida's rivers and streams to levels that were actually lower than that required to prevent really harmful imbalances of flora and fauna. You could say that the EPA criteria were divorced from the reality of Florida's streams and would have led to numerous water bodies in the state being declared impaired for nutrients, even though there's no nutrient problems in the water bodies.
Child says EPA's lakes and springs criteria is expected to go into effect in March 6 unless EPA approves the Florida Department of Environmental Protection standards for those same waters or gets leave from the court to extend the effective date of those standards to June, as EPA has indicated they have wanted to do. The state recently adopted water quality rules that replaced the federal ones, but it's a standard that many environmental groups call weak and has prompted another legal challenge. A hearing is scheduled to begin February 27th on that issue. If a judge rules in favor of the environmental groups, the bill that Governor Rick Scott recently signed into law would be null and void, and any change to the proposed water quality rules would go to the legislature for approval. That bill, House Bill 7051, allowed the proposed water quality rules to bypass the legislature's approval. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
In other news today, House lawmakers pulled the plug on a plan that would give them absolute immunity from testifying in lawsuits. The incoming Senate president is opposing a proposal that would allow state lawmakers to wrap themselves in this absolute immunity. The House Judiciary Committee cleared a bill along party lines last week that would give a legislative privilege to all current and former lawmakers and their staff. But Senator Don Gates today said that he won't support the bill in the Senate. The Niceville Republican is set to replace Mike Haradopoulos next year as head of that chamber. Gates sent a memo to all senators in which he said there's already sufficient and substantial legal protection against intrusive deposition of legislators in matters of public policy. Two of Florida's biggest universities could soon be allowed to raise their tuition rates to the national average. Florida State and the University of Florida have argued they need to raise tuition in order to attract better faculty, lower teacher-student ratios, and fund extensive programs like those in science, technology, engineering, and math. They say tuition increases would also enable them to climb higher in national rankings. And a proposal set to be released in the House tomorrow would give them what they want. The House Education Committee is expected to take up a proposal that would allow tuition increases if universities meet 11 out of 14 measurements. Only UF and FSU would qualify. Meanwhile, Governor Rick Scott has said he does not support a tuition increase for the state's universities. Now here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
A bill in the Senate Environmental Preservation Committee could open up state parks in the Panhandle and the Blackwater River State Forest to more oil and gas drilling. The House version was recently amended to include only the Panhandle west of Tallahassee. This after concerns were raised about its possible application in southwest Florida. Planned Parenthood supporters rally at the Capitol against bills that would restrict access to abortions and other women's health services. The rally at 2 p.m. at the Capitol. Among dozens of bills up for consideration of the Senate Budget Committee on Tuesday is a ban on texting while driving. A measure before the House Health and Human Services Committee on Tuesday would require the Department of Children and Families to deny cash assistance benefits and food assistance benefits to anyone who has been convicted of a felony for the possession of drugs. The bill has an exception for people who have gone through a drug treatment program. And the House Appropriations Committee takes up the William Dillon Claims Bill to provide relief for a man falsely imprisoned for 27 years. And that's the Daybook for Tuesday, February 21st.
Finally, today, Florida Power and Light officials say a new power plant at Port Everglades in Broward County will save customers money and be better for the environment. But Regan McCarthy reports some argue the company is paying more attention to the needs of Wall Street rather than to ratepayers.
Florida Power and Light Representative John Butler says replacing the outdated electric generating units at Port Everglades in Broward County with a new natural gas power plant to the tune of about $1.2 billion would be better for the environment and save customers money. For example, Butler says replacing four 1960s-era oil and gas-fired steam units with a combined cycle unit will lower emissions.
Peak is projected to avoid FPL system air emissions of 22 million tons of carbon dioxide, 40,000 tons of sulfur dioxide, and 33,000 tons of nitrogen oxides, again over 30 years and compared to the existing Everglades units. This is a benefit not only to FPL and its customers in the form of lower emission costs, but to the state of Florida as a whole in the form of cleaner air.
Butler says the Port Everglades Next Generation Clean Energy Center, also called PEAK, which is projected to be completed in 2016, would reduce dependency on oil.
FPL's evaluation shows that building PEAK is projected to reduce oil consumption by 10.4 million barrels and natural gas consumption by 90 million MMBTU over 30 years, compared to returning the existing Everglades units to service. In other words, although PEAK is gas-fired, building and operating it instead of continuing to rely on FPL's older and less efficient units will actually reduce the amount of gas needed to meet customers' energy needs.
And Butler says building the plant would create as many as 650 jobs. John Moyle is a spokesman for the Florida Industrial Power Users Group. Moyle says moving forward with the plan is not in the best interest of the customers.
Really, at the end of the day, who needs this plant? We believe it's not FPL's consumers. We believe it's FPL shareholders that need this plant. It's about being able to meet earnings on Wall Street.
Moyle proposes that instead of building a new plant, Florida Power and Light should make more of an effort to look into buying energy from a third party. But Moyle says there's no incentive for FPL to do so.
The utilities earn a return on their invested capital. They don't earn a return on purchase power agreements. They don't earn a return on fuel.
And Moyle adds the plant would not diversify the state's energy portfolio or help to encourage the use of renewable energy.
Florida Power and Light is very long, very heavy in natural gas. There's lots of discussions about how do we get weaned from natural gas. And in response to that, they're asking you for a need determination for another 1,000 megawatts of natural gas.
Meanwhile, some lawmakers are considering a move that would streamline such projects. Generally, customers pay for new power plants through base rates after plants are up and running. An amendment put forward by Senator Bill Montford would let power companies recoup the cost of building a power plant by increasing rates without first having a hearing, as long as they stay within the projected cost for construction that the PSC previously okayed during a need determination hearing, like the one FPL has just had. Montford withdrew the amendment during a Senate Agriculture Committee meeting.
This is a very complicated issue. It's one that could have a financial impact on businesses and, most importantly, families. And again, I just thought it was too quick notice for my part, then to move forward. Mm-hmm. And something of this significance that could have a far-reaching impact for years to come, I thought it was just best to slow down and let's give everybody an opportunity to talk about it.
Some say they wouldn't be surprised to see a similar amendment come up again. The Public Service Commission will consider the arguments before making a final ruling. A decision is not expected until later next month. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tremel Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.